Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart, and this is part two of our June is Whale Month at Real Science Radio with filmmaker and author Dr. Carl Werner. Carl, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you and your audience.
Well, it's so fun. In our first episode, we gave a bit of an overview of the evolution of whales from the fossil record, ostensibly, and we're still in that overview. We talked a bit about which animal evolutionists think evolved into a whale. And now we're up to a second step of one particular transitional species, Ambulocetus. Could you give us an overview? And I know then later we're going to move into an appendix in your revised and expanded edition of Evolution, the Grand Experiment, and then we'll get into a lot more detail. Give us a little information about Ambulocetus.
Ambulocetus was found by a scientist by the name of Dr. Hans Thewissen, and it has four legs on it, and Dr. Thewissen and his associate, Dr. Hasir Hussain, said this four-legged animal was a walking whale, although if you look at it, you'd say, boy, it doesn't look like a whale to me. Right. It is currently in the museums throughout the world as a walking whale, and the skeletons are up.
And this does get us into your appendix, but one of the highlights of what's come to light because of your work is that Dr. Thewissen has acknowledged that the blowhole that he has presented to the world, and museums all over the world represent Ambulocetus with a blowhole, that part of the skull was never recovered.
That's correct. And many parts of the skeleton were not recovered. And as is common in evolution science, whenever there's missing fossils, that's where you can be creative and make up intermediate traits that would fit the theory of evolution. Mm. But Dr. Thewissen now realizes that even though he sent these skeletons out to all the museums, that in fact it doesn't have a blowhole. It just like has a nose at the tip of its snout like any other land animal.
So we are going to, later in the series, get into the characteristics of the Ambulocetus skull that were claimed to indicate that it was a whale. There are experts in whale evolution, so-called, who say that, well, these are purported similarities to whales because it's very questionable whether any of these claimed similarities are actually similarities.
Yes, in fact, the way he defined this as a whale, the other scientists working in his field said, a whale has never been defined using these new ideas you have of what you're going to call whale characters. So, you know, he wanted to make it a whale. He thought it was a whale, and so he made up new definition of a whale, which is kind of odd, you know?
Yes. And so the Ambulocetus, maybe last particular about it before we get to Rotocetus, is the eye of the Ambulocetus. Could you tell us a bit about the eye?
Next time you go to a natural history museum, you see these large whale skeletons of modern whales. You'll always notice that the eyes aren't on the top of the head like a dog or a cat, but they're down on the side of the head and almost in a line with the upper teeth.
Right.
When they found Ambulocetus, they saw that its eye socket was high up on the top of the head. And it really didn't look like a whale at all because it wasn't aligned with the teeth. This is why some evolution experts say this couldn't be the ancestor to whales. In fact, his own associate, Dr. Gingrich, said this doesn't really make sense because the socket is in the wrong place.
And it's interesting, sort of like politicians who end up competing in a primary, you have Dr. Philip Gingrich, who is the senior of the two, and
yep.
He was the professor, and Hans was the student.
Yep.
And so these two men, as will become more obvious as we continue, they end up finding most of the skeletons for alleged walking whales that appear in museums around the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's tens of thousands of scientists and geologists and scientists out in the field digging through fossils, but it happens to be only these two men that are finding the walking whales.
And if you consider the eyes, like Dr. Gingrich says, well, Ambulocetus, its eyes are too high up on its skull, on its head. And he didn't find Ambulocetus. He found Rhodocetus and Pachycetus and others. You could see how he would choose that particular to criticize, but it all seems so superficial. Like, we look at the teeth and we say, because this land-dwelling species had teeth similar to what we're calling ancient whales, therefore, the whales must have evolved from this species because of the teeth. But then they'll say, well, look at the ear bone of this species. The whale must have evolved from this species. Then they'll say, well, look at where the eye is. And they have so many. And then they'll say, look at the DNA. They have so many features of an organism to look at. Literally, there are hundreds that you could make the story in any direction.
That's right.
Make the story go in any direction that you'd like it to go.
That's right. If you want an animal to be the ancestor, then you focus on the similar traits. And if you want it to not be the ancestor, then you point out the different traits. Mm. And you can make any story you want, as you said.
And like you said in the previous episode, that the favorite fossils of an evolutionist are the partial fossils.
That's right.
Because you could imagine the rest of it. And often it's their imagination that leads them to become world-renowned and their skeletons in museums.
Yep, and the walking whales is the best example of that, where the fossils are missing and they just create traits that aren't even there.
And so many evolutionists still to this day and around the world say that whales are among our best, if not our best, examples of fossil evidence of evolution.
Even though they can't tell you what land animal they evolved from,
right.
And even though that all the body parts on the walking whales that are the most important are all made up, it is the best proof.
Speaking of all made up, that brings us to the third step, Rhodocetus, which was discovered by, again, Dr. Philip Gingrich. So what happened with the skeleton of Rhodocetus that actually, I think this is part of the Werner effect, Carl. You go out and you get on video interviews with these two scientists who found all these walking whales. They admit what should have been obvious from the beginning, but when they admit this, then there's an upheaval in the world of paleontology. Rhodocetus is gradually disappearing from the museums, but could you tell us about Rhodocetus?
Well, you know, everyone was talking about Rhodocetus being this perfect intermediate because it looked kind of like a land animal, but it had flippers and a whale's tail. And yet when we went to the museum, we realized all those parts, the whale tail and the flippers, they didn't have any fossils for that part. They imagined all the whale parts. All they had was some ribs, some spinal vertebrae, and part of the head. But they didn't have these parts. And when we asked the scientists, how do you know that it had these whale parts when, in fact, you don't have the fossils? Surprisingly, each time we ask them that question, they retract it.
Not only do they acknowledge that, well, we didn't have that part of the skeleton, then they'll say, well, and this is in your videos, Carl, and in fact, it's online also. You can see these at realscienceradio.com. Just click on the video tab. But it's part of your video series that we highly recommend here at Bob and Yurt Live. In fact, we sell them in our store. If folks click on the store tab, they could get Carl Werner's two videos, Volume 1 and Volume 2, and they're absolutely tremendous. So you see the discoverers not only acknowledge that those parts of the skeleton were not there, but that really they no longer think that they had these whale features.
Yep. When we did that interview, by the way, Bob, I was just stunned. I was like, are you kidding? I mean, really, the whale tail was just made up, and you know that, and yet, why is this still in the museum? Because he was also in charge of that museum. You know, he had influence on the museum to take down these displays.
Yeah, to correct them.
Correct them, and yet he's telling me, no, the whale tail was made up, the flippers were made up, and yet the museum, I just came from the museum, and you still have that display up. Why wouldn't you have taken it down?
And in fact, as we'll get into, Dr. Gingrich will appear on nationally televised documentaries holding the false skull, the false reconstruction, when they have now found a number of skeletons and skulls, and they have the corrected skull from actual fossils, but they'll hold and they'll present the false story.
The faked out one with the blowhole and all that. Yeah, that, it's disturbing. It's so, very disturbing.
So Rhodocetus, now the front flippers and the rear flippers and the fluke tail, that's like a tail that a whale has. It gets wide at the end. The fluke tail, that's all gone, including from the paleontologist and the discoverer himself. Rhodocetus never had those features.
That's right. And now, surprisingly, Rhodocetus, instead of having front flippers, now has hoofed feet.
Right. Yeah.
That's a little bit of a problem, you know?
It's rather startling. Yet you quote Dr. Annalisa Berta, who, as with virtually all these scientists that you quote from, she is a specialist in aquatic mammal evolution. Now, I don't know how you could be a specialist in something that never happened, but she is from San Diego State University, and she said that Rhodocetus was using its tail fluke for propulsion through the water and not using the hind limbs. This is interesting because they didn't have the tail, they didn't have the hind limbs.
And it's also interesting that this wasn't corrected. Like, for example, when Dr. Gingrich realized that Rhodocetus didn't have a fluke tail, that he didn't take it down from the museum, and that he didn't send out an email to all of his colleagues, hey, this is all wrong. Because we're going around interviewing the world scientists on whale evolution, and they're all telling us, oh my gosh, Rhodocetus is the best proof of evolution. Look at it, it has a fluke tail. Look at it, it has flippers. It's amazing.
Right.
And yet when we get to the museum to interview the scientists, he said, no, it doesn't have any of that.
Right.
I made a mistake. But it seemed like he didn't inform these other scientists in a timely manner that this was all wrong.
That seems obvious. And in fact, it's because of your book and your videos that the museums are very begrudgingly changing their exhibits way too slow. And they still have plenty of misinformation in their whale exhibits. But the whole story is too big to fail. So they can't just acknowledge that all the walking whales were fabricated. They can't
all
do that. But they're headed in that direction.
Yep.
And so, like at Wikipedia, when you look at their article, that's ever-changing, understandably, but on whale evolution, you see that Rhodocetus, what they've done is put Rhodocetus, instead of being a subhead, now it's just a detail within a different subhead.
Mm-hmm.
And the different subhead now is Protocetae, and Rhodocetus is a part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's just confuse it with a lot of words instead of just acknowledge, hey, this is a good teaching point. Look what we did, and by accident, we actually did this. We ought to be careful. Instead of acknowledging that up front for all to understand, putting the hooves back onto Rhodocetus that it actually had, you know, they just rename it, confuse it with a lot of science speak, and not make it clear for the public what actually happened
here. That's called obfuscation. And when they obfuscate, then they're still able to use the other walking whales discovered by the same fraudulent scientist.
I just do find this amazing that they've been saying this since the year 2001, that whale evolution is the best proof of evolution. And yet all of this went down in the last 14 years. Rhodocetus went out, Ambulocetus went out, the mesonychids went out, the walking animals that supposed to became whales. And yet they're still saying the line, it's the best proof of evolution. That's just stunning.
And to conclude the discussion about Rhodocetus, we have the quote from the scientist you mentioned earlier, Dr. Taseer Hussain. This is so interesting to me because he says that with Rhodocetus, we have a complete modern whale-type structure. It turns out that he is the co-discoverer of Ambulocetus.
Dr. Taseer Hussain, of anybody, should have known that Rhodocetus was problematic. He found the other walking whale, and so Dr. Toussaint, the discoverer of Ambulocetus, would have known all the other purported walking whales. So with that knowledge, being on the fast track of all this new information coming out, even he doesn't realize that he's been duped by the other fossil.
And he is the co-discoverer of Ambulocetus with Hans Thewissen. That would make him one of the world's leading experts. I mean, this is right in his field.
This is the top third guy because he's the co-discoverer of Ambulocetus. Now, he's obviously gone and looked at these fossils of Rhodocetus. He should have spotted that there was no whale tail. He should have spotted that there's no whale fins.
There's
no flippers.
There was
no fossils.
Right.
And yet he said that Rhodocetus had a complete whale-like structure,
complete.
Which turned out to be not true. It had hooves on its feet.
He uses the word complete. We have a complete modern whale-type structure in Rhodocetus, and he's with the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History.
He's also at Howard. He's actually stationed at Howard, but he's a research associate at Smithsonian, but he's mostly at Howard University. But anybody that should have been able to spot an error and wanted to have clarity on this should have said, hey, we don't know about Rhodocetus. We only have a few fossils of this thing. Instead, he took the bait, the drawing that there was made out with the whale tail on it, and said, oh, well, we have this whale intermediate, a four-legged whale, walking whale with a whale tail and flippers. If he can't spot it and he's on the fast track and he can't call this out, really, what information can you trust from the evolution proponents? He should have called this out in this interview and said, we don't have this. This is just conjecture. But he didn't.
Right.
He said, oh, no, we have a walking whale, a complete whale-like structure in this four-legged animal.
Yeah.
And really, you go into the museum to see the fossils. None of these fossils are there.
The cognitive dissonance that must be in their minds. You know, when you watch a movie and you have the suspension of unbelief, it's almost like, to these guys, that's what science is. You just have to tell the canonical story of the evolution of the whale. And if you tell the story, then you will be approved. And you're not going to be challenged by mainstream science.
That's right.
We have been saying on Bob and Yurt Live and Real Science Radio for years, the most famous evolutionists, like the most famous atheists, are those who say the most absurd thing with the straightest face. If you say something utterly absurd with a straight face, if you're good at that, you could be a leading evolutionist. Now we come to the last step, Basilosaurus. And it's so peculiar to me that they put these fossils, they line them up. They say, look, isn't it obvious that one evolved into the other? This is a very peculiar looking creature.
Yeah, and if you actually saw this creature next to the other purported walking whales, you would say, this is a disconnect. This thing is enormous. It's 60 feet long, and yet the walking whale was only 15 feet long. How could you go from something 15 to 60 feet long and say this is stepwise evolution? You know, if you put them on diagrams and change their size, relative size, you can get away with saying this is a whale intermediate. But if you actually look at the fossils, it's way off in size.
And this is consistent. This has happened through the decades that evolutionists, when they want to show a horse evolution or whatever, they will normalize the body sizes so that it looks like very superficial, but it looks like it fits their story.
Yep, you get a progressively enlarging animal. And it seems like evolution, but this animal is four times the size of the walking whale.
Do all evolutionists who specialize in, you know, whale evolution, would they all agree that Basilosaurus should be in the fossil evidence for whale transition?
Absolutely not. Now, see, they put this into the diagram saying that it's an ancestor to whales. But if you talk to another whale evolution expert, they would say, you can't put it in the line because it's living at the same time as the advanced whales, the more modern types that have the modern teeth whales and modern baleen whales. So how can it Basilosaurus be the ancestor to baleen whales when it's living at the same time as a baleen whale? See, it doesn't make sense to the other scientists, but one scientist will put it in their museum diagram. And it seems plausible, unless you have a PhD and a specializing in whale evolution, you wouldn't even pick up the errors of their ways, you know?
And so that opens up quite a topic in and of itself, like the Japanese biologist using genetic sequencing who says, no, it's not the cat-like creature, it's not a hyena-like creature, it's not a bear-like creature. It's a hippopotamus that whales evolved from because they're the most similar. And they say they're 100% certain they had to evolve from a hippo-like organism. And then the paleontologists say, but wait a minute, there are no hippos in the fossil record until tens of millions of years after the whales. So at one point, if it reinforces the story, they'll say, well, look, we found these bones at a lower layer, strata, than these others. So obviously this evolved into that. But if it's not convenient, then they'll say, well, the thing at the top of this geologic column evolved into the thing at the bottom of the column.
Yeah, that's kind of problematic.
In reality, it doesn't matter where it is. If the anatomy, if the genes, if the ear bone, whatever, if it tells a story, then that's the story they run with.
Yep. You know, now there's a scientist who says it wasn't a hippo, it wasn't a cat that evolved into a whale. Now there's a scientist that says it was a little deer, the mouse deer. And, well, if that's true, these Japanese scientists should have come up with the answer, mouse deer DNA is the closest to the living whale.
Right.
But they didn't.
Right.
It only makes sense when you pick out the data you want.
Yeah, and I think
make your story.
I think we'll get into the deer whale transition in our next program. So, Carl Werner, you conclude your whale chapter with a reminder of the scientists who say that whale evolution from the fossils is the best evidence they have.
It's the best. It's unusual because all the other groups, like, you know, the phyla groups just show up. And there's no ancestors. This is an unusual animal. Okay, here is one animal we actually have fossil evidence of evolution, and this is the best example we have.
You point out, and you do a great job in your Appendix A, of documenting how many whale fossil bones do we have. We have about a billion fossils that have been recovered by museums around the world, actually excavated.
Of all fossils.
Of all fossils, about a billion. Right. Of whale bones that have been discovered, there are far more than many people would guess. You recall the number?
It's millions.
Yeah, over 2 million fossil whale bones. That means we've got a pretty good set of data to work with.
And with all, it should be clear.
Yes, and with all that data to work with, the best that the evolutionary community comes up with is wild assumptions.
Confabulations.
Yeah, so you point out that the scientists who support evolution, they say that, well, science is always changing and self-correcting, and we hear that in every debate that we have with evolutionists, Carl. But this sordid affair documents the low standard of evidence for the worldwide evolution community. The most famous evolutionists are those who say the greatest absurdity with the straightest face. That's what this chapter documents. It's not documenting that science is self-correcting, because actually it's corrected when creationists are outraged and show the world what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
What this documents is the shockingly low standard of evidence for the evolutionary community.
It's creating evidence when there is none.
Wow.
And telling the world that the evidence all lines up perfectly.
Yeah.
In reality, the evidence is absent.
And at the University of Denver debate I mentioned in our first program with Bill Jack, founder of Worldview Academy, and a young, just got his degree in biology from DU, Travis Barlock. Travis was pointing out that the evidence for whale evolution is powerful evidence for his side. And he said, when you look at the genetic evidence, it reinforces the fossil evidence. It's exactly what we'd expect, and that's typical. You hear that from every evolutionist you debate. And the truth is that the genetic evidence completely contradicts all of the claims based on anatomy and behavior and the fossil record and the whole geologic column, in fact, when it points to hippos.
The genetic evidence works when you select which evidence you're going to use.
Mm.
You have to be very selective on which genes and which examples you're going to use. You can easily find other examples that would contradict the evidence, but as long as you're willing to just select some of the evidence, oh yeah, it's perfect.
Well, right. If you discount most of the evidence, where the genetic sequencing done in Japan, when they could say that they're 100% certain that it's a hippopotamus. That's
hippo-like
the closest
animal, yep.
That's when you take all the data and you say, well, we're going to compare the entire genome to an entire whale genome, lo and behold, it throws out all the previous theories. So,
and again, it's wrong. Even the hippo idea was wrong. You know, it just keeps changing. And if this is the best proof of evolution, I say science is ever changing. We have disproved the theory of evolution.
Right. Well, that's not allowed. Of course, there's now the third way, and there's an increasing number of even secular, even materialist scientists, biologists who are saying that Darwinian evolution does not explain the diversity of life on Earth. It does not. It cannot. So you begin then your Appendix F with a quote, very well-known quote from a Harvard University professor, in fact, a paleontologist. So Dr. Stephen Jay Gould, in fact, he was with the American Museum of Natural History in New York City when I was a young kid growing up in northern New Jersey, and we'd go over the George Washington Bridge, and that was our favorite museum to go to, and the Hall of Dinosaurs. I mean, it was all just astounding. I would read these evolution books as a young kid. So, of course, I believed in evolution. So what is it that Jay Gould let out of the bag?
Gould was the first one to explain to the public that the fossils do not show evolution, that groups of animals like corals, sponges, arthropods, each group just shows up without ancestors in the fossil record. Mm. And it's like, are you kidding?
Right.
We were always told that the fossil record showed evolution, and Gould said it was a trade secret. Animal groups just simply show up without ancestors. That's stunning. That's the end of evolution back in 1977 when he said that.
Well, yeah, it's the trade secret of paleontology that there are no transitional forms. Looking at the entire fossil record, generally speaking, you have very diverse groups of organisms that appear fully formed in the fossil record.
That's exactly right. Not only the phyla, like coral, sponges, worms, things like that, but even within the phyla, the classes, the orders, the families just show up without transitions getting to them.
It's like, and so since that characterizes the entirety of the fossil record, then evolutionary scientists were thrilled to be able to cite whale evolution as an exception.
That's right. They can say, well, maybe there's some problem with 1 billion fossils we found. Maybe that's not enough. But look, we do have one good example. Well, we have two or three. We have one really good example over here, whale evolution. We can see a land animal changing in the layers into a whale. We
yes.
have all the fossils. It's fantastic.
So could we end on that note? And then with our third episode, what I'd like to do is begin with Charles Darwin. All right, Dr. Werner? And we'll see what
that
he thought
like
about
a winner.
All this. Okay. So that's Dr. Carl Werner. His book, Evolution, The Grand Experiment, is actually Volume 1. There's Volume 2. And if you want to get your feet wet, I recommend the videos. Just go to realscienceradio.com, click on the Store tab, and you'll see Dr. Carl Werner's videos. It's tremendous. May God bless you. That's what I'm talking about.